Now, because we like to ponder big questions on Radio Boston, we ask, what is a dog?
Lassie is the story of a dog and a boy. Oh, it isn't a pretentious picture or an epic. It is too real, too human, too beautiful for high-sounding adjectives.
Is Lassie a real dog? Well, maybe not. Our guest, Raymond Coppinger, argues that real dogs are the millions and millions of free-ranging dogs all over the world. These are dogs that scavenge at dumps and wander around neighborhoods worldwide, creating their own communities and harboring rabies and other diseases. Those dogs are certainly very different from Lassie. Raymond Coppinger, professor emeritus of biology at Hampshire College, and his wife, Lorna Coppinger, are co-authors of the book What is a Dog? Ray joins us now from Pelham, Massachusetts. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Oh, thank you very much.
Let's start with an awfully big number. Roughly 750 million dogs in the world are scavengers. These are not domesticated animals, but they are domestic, which means they live in the presence of people. Describe the average domestic village dog, the focus of your latest book.
All right. I think that I know the figure is 750 million. I think it's more than that.
Really?
I keep adjusting that. But what they are is that they're, if you go to Africa, or you go any of the village life in Africa, but even if you go to cities, Africa, India, China, wherever, it's loaded with dogs.
Yeah, I had that experience. I was in Sochi, and it was loaded with dogs during the Winter Olympics.
As a matter of fact, at that particular time, they were picking them up and they were taking them out and putting them on the islands so that there wouldn't be so many dogs running around at the Olympics.
I don't know if they quite succeeded with that. But can you give us an idea of a typical day in the life of a village dog? Do they spend their days roaming the local dump, roaming a neighborhood in Sochi, Russia, waiting for handouts from humans?
Look, at the reason I got into studying those dogs is because they have such interesting lives. I used to teach courses in the Mexico City dump, where there's something like 750 dogs.
Wow.
And these dogs, they spend part of the day feeding, part of the day waiting for the trucks to come to bring the feed to them. And then the rest of the day, they spend socializing with other dogs. They do all kinds of things. There's an awful lot of reproduction that goes on.
I just got to ask, how do you teach a course in the Mexico City dump? I mean, how does that go? Do you sit dump side and have a chalkboard? I mean, how does a lecture at the Mexico City dump go?
First of all, you get a nearby hotel for everybody to stay in. And usually there's a lecture room in the hotel, and you get up in the morning and you say, all right, here's what we're going to look at today. And then we would go out, and I'd get the students to do surveys in the dump. I mean, in the Mexico City dump, there's probably 200 people that live in that dump. And so we would interview them. We would talk about them with dogs. It turns out they know an awful lot about dogs.
Let's get back to those dogs. You write that village dogs or street dogs contain the essential essence of dog. Explain what you mean by that. What is the essence of dog?
It's an old term. It comes all the way from Aristotle. And Aristotle thought that the way you defined a species was by its essence. Each species would have its own essence. And our society is always trying to say that the dog evolved from the wolf, when they say wolf, they think of the big Arctic gray wolf. And if I asked you what is a wolf, and you all of a sudden say, well, I know what a wolf is. It has the essence of wolf. Well, is that the same essence that you get with essence of dog? And the answer is no. They have their own. I know a dog when I see one. I can feel it. And I think that the whole idea of trying to equate dogs as some kind of derivative of a wolf is a big mistake. They're a very different animal.
Now, in the book, you also compared dogs to pigeons and cockroaches. Why? How are dogs like pigeons and cockroaches?
When you talk to people, they will say, when did man first domesticate the dog? As if people did it. And so in the book, I use the illustration of pigeons. You go to Central Park, and it's full of pigeons. You go to Trafalgar Square in England, and it's full of pigeons. You go to Milano, it's full of pigeons. You go to China, and it's full of pigeons. And so if I sat there and asked you the question, when did man first domesticate the pigeon? You'd say, well,
I have no idea.
I'm not sure that they did. And you'd say, and so I think there's a confusion in the society about the difference between domestic
and domesticated.
An animal or a species that live with people or around people,
mm-hmm.
And domesticated. If you wanted to start talking about your pet dogs or your working dogs or something, they didn't come from wolves. They came from this background population of domestic dogs, my village dogs.
Gotcha. Let's switch gears a little bit here. Dogs are often vectors of disease and a huge problem for many, many governments around the world. Can you talk about the different attitudes towards dogs that you encountered in places that you traveled throughout the world? Maybe you want to even start at the Mexico City dump and how the workers there interacted with dogs.
The problem with dogs all around the world is that they're not vaccinated against rabies. They're not vaccinated against other diseases. They live on scavenged items, and so they're liable to pick up and transmit diseases from humans to humans. And it's a monstrous problem. I mean, the United Nations has a dog unit, and they work all over the world keeping tabs on things like rabies. 70,000 people a year die of rabies from dog bites. In a place where I work down in South Africa, Zulu Natal, 43,000 people a year get taken to the hospital by ambulance and treated from rabies. For rabies, not because they had rabies, but because they were bitten by a dog in an area where there was rabies. And it's a huge expense.
Let's move on to a more pleasurable part of the human-dog relationship. There always seems to be a question of who adopts whom. Does it work both ways? Can a dog adopt a human?
Part of what dogs do for a living is adopt somebody. Little puppies. If you go to some place like the Mexico City dump or some African village or something, 50% of the dogs will be adults, and the other 50% will be fat puppies,
mm-hmm.
Nursing puppies. Now, mother dogs tend to abandon their young right after nursing is over, so they get abandoned when they're about 6, 8, 10 weeks old.
So there's adoption possibilities. I just want to move on with one last question here,
okay.
Which is, I'm sure we have many listeners who are thinking, you know, you're talking about the village dog, fine, but this has nothing to do with my cockapoo or my labradoodle. What would you say to that? And we only have about 30 seconds here.
I would say that your labradoodle or your cockatoo came 200 years ago. Its ancestors were these village dogs.
And so I think that sounds like you have plenty of material to write about in the future. Should we expect more books on dogs?
Oh, yeah, I have to talk to Lorna about that.
Maybe we will in the future. Raymond Coffinger is Professor Emeritus of Biology at Hampshire College. He is the co-author of two books about dogs with his wife, Lorna Coffinger, Dogs, A Startling New Understanding of Canine Origin, Behavior, and Evolution, and most recently, What is a Dog? Ray, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Shira Springer. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.